Thank you for listening to this audio recording from LimoPlanet 2020 Free the Future. The following talk was presented at LimoPlanet, the Free Software Foundation's annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology. For more information on LimoPlanet, visit limoplanet.org/conference. LimoPlanet is a live conference with speakers who often use visual slides in their presentations. We have only selected talks for this audio feed that do not overly rely on visuals, but if you would like to see a speaker's slides, they are available at media.limoplanet.org. LimoPlanet speakers do not represent the Free Software Foundation. As part of our mission to show how important free software is to everyone, we have speakers talking about their use of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take positions on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedoms of all computer users, LimoPlanet is made possible by thousands of individuals who, like you, donate what they can. To keep this work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join or making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss.
Okay, hello everybody. This is LimoPlanet 2020, and we are with Catherine Sutter, and she's with us with her presentation, and she's going to just talk about community healing, reestablishing norms, trust, and truth after crisis. So, Catherine, we have like 40-45 minutes, so I'm without wasting time giving the stage to you. Welcome.
Okay. Thank you. I've been listening to all the talks I could. I've listened all day. I just missed a talk and a half just before this one. Am I coming through pretty clearly for the audience? I'm watching my IRC feed.
Well, you are coming to me quite nicely. Please go ahead. Stage okay. is yours.
Alrighty. So introducing myself, on IRC, I'm DLib. I'm Catherine Sutter, PhD. My expertise is in community development and policy analysis through urban studies at Portland State University, Urban and Public Affairs. And I came into that program as a community activist. And I never thought of myself as a community activist, but in an academic circle, I certainly was. In terms of my persona, what people thought of me, because I've always analyzed communities around me and I always tried to facilitate good projects that I saw around me. So I was very involved in hands-on, on-the-ground organizing and paying attention to organizers and leaders. And I think I've had a pretty good eye for important social movements. So I'm coming to this talk at LimoPlanet as an observer participant in the free software world. I wanted to add that, just FYI, I feel very analytic of my own communications, and I will make some recommendations in this talk that I don't believe I've followed all the time, that I've made these mistakes. So I can use those as examples, and I don't need to just point out other people. Just to warm up, this window that you're seeing is in Journal, XOURNAL. It's a PDF graphic manipulator, so I can draw on PDF, and I produced this slide set as from Emacs that I exported to HTML. I opened it with LibreOffice. I edited the pages, inserting page returns in front of section headings. I then exported that to a PDF, and then I opened it with Journal. So I don't normally talk about the technical aspect of things and reassure people that I'm a user. So there you go. My avatar is an homage to tinkerers of the millennia, many, many, many millennia over time. Last year at Seagull, the Seattle GNU Linux conference, a couple FSF folks asked me if I would submit a talk about healing after crisis. And I decided today that after listening to the talks of the last 2 days, that rather than being a how-to, that I should help actually try to do some healing of the community in my feedback, in my giving observations and mirroring to you, you know, to us, what I see from my perspective, the kind of person I am. And I'll use these images of stick figures of people around a thing, because I talk about speakers and presenters and participants and common concerns and the commons. So participants speak about a thing and they share ideas between them and they may or may not get along with each other. So I'm going to use this graphic to talk about it a bit. So when I'm talking about crises in a community, I usually think about it in terms of communications. That's who I am. And I'll talk about those three types, right? Norms, trust, and truth. Three types of communications that all could be in crisis. And in free software world, we have a lot of opinionated folks, and we have a lot of voluntary projects that are very niche, that are very quirky, and have common cause, but there's a lot of open deliberation and open discourse and a lot of arguments. And so I'm going to try to break that down into these three aspects. So norms are about appropriateness, right? When there's a crisis in appropriateness, it means that these folks here might know what they're talking about in terms of their norms about what's considered normal, but the other outside person doesn't necessarily. They might not share it. And these two folks with a common culture, they don't necessarily see that they live in that culture. They're the fish in the water until they see this other person walk around that looks a little bit different. When that breaks down, when this common language that people share is no longer shared, no longer means the same thing, the rules are broken, or if the rules are no longer the same rules, then we have to rely on other kinds of deliberation. Trust is about a sense of knowing of what's going on inside someone's subjective experience. So you can't really know what's going on in the black box of someone else. But over time, you get to know them. But when things change and you believe you've learned something about that person or that group that you didn't believe before, it causes an inability to communicate. You break down that channel of trust, and it makes it harder for everybody to talk about the thing. And then the last one is truth, right? Norms, trust, and truth. When you have untruth, if we can't verify the information, if we can't know the source, which is actually a representational issue, but usually we're pretty good about objective issues in free software, in technical communities in general. I mean, that's the thing, right? How does this thing work? How do we observe it from many different sides? How do we do tests on it? That's a strength of the free software world. But when they're all broken down, we can feel lost. And in fact, entire communities can disappear because they might no longer have their language, common language. The rules and the language are both intersubjective, right? Those are things that are a common understandings. And then the truth about what actually are we talking about? Where is this thing? Is this thing here? Did it ever exist? If we can't verify that, that's hard. And then if we can't trust other people, and so we end up feeling blind. And so I'm going to talk here in the next, I created two sections, basically one saying, here are the strengths that you need to back up and rely on when you're trying to rebuild when these things break down. So in terms of the free software community, there are so many strengths in terms of deliberative practice. They are honestly, besides my own family, you know, hacking experience from the 70s, and my own technical, you know, DIY tinkering attitude, the thing that's really absorbed me in the free software community is the deliberative capacity that it has amassed and its ability to teach that to the rest of the world. So it's a very powerful and strong movement. And I think it's important for me to start with saying, let's look at what one of those strengths are. Because whenever you're having a disagreement with someone, say the rules have changed. If these rules have changed, we might need to back up and find out what our most common solid ground is. If our facts of the last 4 years seem incorrect, we need to back up to more conservative knowledge bases in terms of better tested, better known personal experiences or third-party trusted information sources. And when we are dealing with a lot of people we don't know or people who have changed, we need to rebuild that understanding of each other. And so I think it's important for me to start with just talking about the strengths of the movement. What do we have to work with here? Number one, history. Software developers in general, especially free software developers, have now for a couple generations, at least I think conservatively 40 years, have had experience in peer-to-peer communications. When I grew up as an old lady, I'm an old lady now, when I was a kid, we criticized multimedia or central media TV for putting out a bad message. But you know what? At least we were all complaining about the same media source. We were all complaining about whether we loved or hate any particular program or any particular source of programs. But now this first generation is now in the world learning how to do instantaneous peer-to-peer communication. But in the free software world, we have now generations of folks who have cultural experience and norms around how to communicate peer-to-peer. Examples are IRC expectations, right? Another really powerful set of tools, norms, and expectations in the free software world are development tools like issue tracking, forum threading, and revision control. Crucially important and not always available. So for example, your public representative needs in his office to keep track of what are the issues that are coming up, who's talking about what, when, and what was the problem in your software project. What the revision control allows you to say, when this all broke, what else was changing? Or when it was all working, what was different than what we have now? So revision control is a hugely important tool. Issue tracking, what's bug reporting if people can't keep track of what the issues are? And forum threading that allows people to find out whether in fact they're talking on the topic. These are all norms that are really important. A mission, a common benefit, that's another norm. I think the software movement is hugely powerful because people will stay involved even when they change jobs, not only because of their skill base and at getting them a job, but because it's what they care about. And the common benefit might be defined differently between groups. It certainly is. One group knows that it's just the code base that their company relies on and it has to stay alive. Other people know that it's fun to work with, or they like the benefits of the applications built with it. The different benefits of various programs are widely diverse, but there's this common mission of we're all doing this for each other's, for mutual benefit. The free software movement is very accustomed to outspoken individualism. There's plenty of opportunity to express differing insights. And again, I'll talk about bug reporting. If you're in an environment where your ideas are great because you're paying for them all and that's all you're hearing about, you're not benefiting from the ability to hear the impact on other developers, other code bases, other applications, other users, and people that you had never heard of before that have a large impact put on them by what you're doing. And overall, software projects tend to be self-governing. It might be just very small with just a couple people, but because it's on their own dime or because they're being paid by someone who's contributing it to the Free Software World because they need it for their business interests. So you individually might not be a volunteer, but in general, it's a voluntary community of people interacting, and you can't get someone to do what you want them to do unless they agree. And even if you're talking about large companies and commercial interests, they can't share that code base unless they come to an agreement on that to some extent. That's a hugely powerful history we have in the movement. Also, because another aspect of it being voluntary historically and even less paid before is that people get to build trust with each other just through time. And I drew this here as a comics because it's, you know, it's representing change in time. At first, no one knows each other. They're all black boxes. But over time, you start to see personalities emerge. You get a sense of what somebody means in a particular context. And when you move forward, you have that increased knowledge. Yeah, I love journal. I think it's fun. I don't know how to read a PDF without journal open. So that's one of the reasons I keep, at one point I would not use my office Windows computer because I just couldn't open journal. In software world, the ability to analyze facts is pretty strong. I don't think I need to spend a lot of time on it, but that is a really big strength. A big strength of the movement is it does have a if not scientific, at least technical history of pragmatics, practicality. It also has a large commons. We have a huge commons. I use this Debian diagram often because it shows all the different processes, all the time-based steps that go into getting out this amazingly huge and valuable operating system. But it also shows that it's not just the products that we're putting out. Like in the end, you get one release, right? And the history and archives, the previous releases. But you also have those processes. You have this social commons of this social history, this culture of working together with thousands of contributors across the globe making this thing happen, relied on internationally for our international communicative infrastructure, actually. So I said something about trust. I think I already mentioned the voluntary involvement in that slide. Another thing to be proud of in the free software community, some of the strength is that with many complaints and with many people coming to free software with complaints about other venues, we're seeing huge efforts in creating safer spaces. There are fights being waged and maybe won, but at least fought to create safe environments for people to be actually to represent their interests and to get work done. I mentioned face-to-face meetings. And I'm mentioning shared histories. When people have worked on things for years and solved problems together, they not only learn about that code, they're learning about, sorry, I'm starting to see the IRC. Love external, would love to link to that graphic. Hopefully this will all come out and be saved. But yeah, I'm just making the same point again that when you've worked together with people, that trust you've built with them transfers over, not just around your common knowledge of this technical product you're putting out, but it also is a common knowledge of each other and even transferring away to other groups how to work with people. And some people don't learn that. And frankly, there are a lot of people working on computers because they can't work with people. And computers at least will give clearer answers to specific questions and will give more specific responses to clear input. And so that is actually one of the issues in communicating in free software. But meanwhile, developing those pathways for contributions is a strength. Hopefully I've mentioned it already that, you know, this came up when I was so excited seeing all the young contributors in our original keynote yesterday, and other folks in IRC coming together around this idea of free as in freedom. But I also saw fear and this sense of that we're up against the machine. And of course we all are, but we're also part of it. And I want to remind people in terms of strengths that there's a diversity in the free software movement that is about interests. I'm not talking about race or gender or class. We don't have a lot of diversity there. But what we do have diversity in is type of interests. We have a global network of people who rely on free software all the time, and they are not all freedom advocates mad at their telephones. You know, these are folks running government servers. These are folks running commercial servers. These are people just trying to get their camera on sold and produced. And I'd like to see more reliance on licensure around freedom in China, where manufacturers have trouble with trademark because there's, you know, there's not that history of intellectual property rights. They just take the code they need and get it out. Wouldn't it be great if they could take advantage of the legal reliability of being able to put out a product with open licenses on it in their hardware? So just remember, we've got very powerful allies. Don't think when you say, yes, there's monopoly capital and I'm number one concerned about the monopolies taking over our communicative infrastructure. But that doesn't mean that I don't have allies in those companies that haven't yet learned what their interest is and have and are trying to educate their employers. Get more to that later. Truth. Bug reporting. People might be really unhappy, but thank goodness we have it, right? You have to deal with a really angry user who's depending on your product, but when they get that information to you, you can do better on your own work and finding the coders to improve your product or actually improving it yourself. So one of the things I want to talk about in, and I'm just going to close this up. No, I can't. You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot lately in terms of free software and crises is that the community communications that are breaking down are not unique to free software world. That in fact, internationally, we're having breakdown of political discourse everywhere. Even people who support their government are being parts of rallies against their government for particular causes because they're just so strong and capable of finally getting something they want. But that causes a lot of social unrest and reasons for, you know, the few oligarchs up there to have more and more reasons for squashing the polis, you know, convincing us that politics are bad, that we shouldn't be involved. There's separation of families between left and right. And I am just as judgmental as anyone else when I'm around ideas that I don't agree with. I either retreat or I argue. And sometimes I have to retreat because I want to argue in dangerous circumstances. But I can still see, you know, and this is with my analytic hat, that over the world, we're being divided. And personally, I have the hunch that it's marketing analytics that are doing it, that we actually are having the first case I've really noticed of the robots against the people is that our communications are being analyzed and fractured so that we are being grouped with those people who we have the most similarity with. And then within those groups, we're being divided in terms of which one of us respond to certain stimuli in certain ways, so that we're getting to the point where we're not able to hear the concerns of people that are trivially different from us, because there might be something to us is not trivial, but in a larger picture, maybe should be. So I'll go on with this and I'll come back to that. So recommendations around norms. Norms are about understandings. I'm going to just check time. How am I doing for time here?
Well, you are doing great, actually.
How
You
much time
have
do
20 minutes you have left still.
I have? I should have just looked at my clock. Thank you so much. I'm a bit auditory
Okay.
this way. So norms are about understandings, common understandings. So they include what language are we speaking? What do the words mean? What's the agenda item? What are we talking about? What's the topic? When is it appropriate to use what kind of language to talk about a certain topic, or what kind of behavior is expected in a hallway track or in a formal meeting? And it reminds me of a young mathematician, a brilliant mathematician, came cum laude out of University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And every time I talked to him about this topic when it was first forming for me back in the 80s, he said, Kathy, 90% of communication is finding the channel. And you know what? It's been, how long has that been? 40 years now? I keep thinking that he said that. And it is, because even though what we're trying to do is talk about an objective thing, does this code work or not? Did my change break it or not? Is a different code base better? What do you mean by better? Well, we have norms that allow us to communicate on this thing. And so if we don't build that channel between us to help us under communicate with each other, we can't. And if one of the people is different than the other people, in terms of their understanding of what the words are meaning, we can't really talk about the thing. So sometimes you just have to put attention into reestablishing the norms, either redeciding what they should be or going back to some old ones, or whether somebody actually broke a norm or not and what the consequences should be. A recommendation under norm setting, when we're in this stage when we're all really happy that this Icecast has gone out with Jitsi and IRC, and we're able to have this conference together, even though I don't get to hang out with you guys, and I forget your names, and then I see your face, and I realized what great conversations we've had in the past, and you don't know me because I'm not putting my picture on here. But we're all really excited and happy, and we say, beautiful, beautiful. But what happens? So now, in a situation like this, when we're happy, is a time to set up norms for how we will change rules in the future. And I don't mean formalizing them to the point where you can't change them. The opposite. I'm actually talking about formalizing processes by which we can decide what the rules are later. So I took out this page from C.T. Butler about on conflict and consensus. And he describes what he believed were the steps of this informal consensus process that was being used in consensus-based activist groups in the 70s. And I think he put out the first version of this in the 80s. And if you follow these, you'll see that it looks a lot like what open standards committees have used in order to, clarify the process, get a large group discussion, list all the concerns, and put them in individual groups before you decide which one you're going to try to change. So this is a process that folks can follow, and it becomes a tradition, and it's helpful for traditions to be transparent about them, train the new people on them, rotate roles so that people get a sense of how to do this. And I believe there is a history like this. But people forget that norm setting, setting the rules, deciding what the laws are, what license you're going to use on that fun open code you've been playing with, what do you mean by open? These are much easier to do when you're all getting happy together and everything's cool. It's harder to do it when you're contesting some part of it. I've been saying for years creating safe places for conflict is important, and there's more and more effort going into that. But I'm going to air again that idea that what we want in a safe place isn't just a place where people aren't getting hurt. So yes, if you're being hurt, you want a safe place to be pulled out to so that you can decompress and not hurt someone else in response. You know, you want to walk away from conflict, of course. But I'm also talking about the kind of safe space where the entire conference, the entire meeting, the entire process is safe enough so that disruptive, unpopular, foreign, and at first you might wonder if off the wall, not on topic ideas can be expressed in a way that's safe enough so that you can do that thinking together and discern whether those ideas are good ones or not. And here's where I'm going to talk about criticizing myself. There's an aspect of inclusion that's about representation. And I don't remember what that slide is, but I talk about it here briefly. So if a person like myself comes in a room of coders who tend to be young white men, okay, some of you guys are over 40 or 50 now, but I was still watching people in your age in diapers. So if I come into your room and we're talking and the first thing you ask me is, what is it like to be an old woman? Yeah, I might be love to talk about it because I like the air. I want to be able to talk about that. But it does mean that whatever topic I was talking about gets interrupted and I don't get, it's a way of excluding someone like myself from the conversation. I don't think I'm a great example. I think I did this earlier to a few speakers today. I thought a woman was coming from a public policy perspective, but by asking her personally what her background was to make give advice about career stuff, she had to stop talking about her project and instead talking about her own training. Yeah, she was trained as an anthropologist. Yay, I really love that. But I understand that I did it again, speaking to an Indian presenter when he was talking about Indian history, but he was talking about Indian history from the point of view of the importance of a similar social movement that happened in his country's history that we're facing now. And so by asking him about India, as if he would be an expert on India, I'm taking that topic away from him. And this is really important for all of us to learn. Personally, I'm doing analysis all the time. I want to know where somebody came from. I'm really interested in social movements. I want to know about ancient migrations. But I need to remember to help people stay on topic, because that representational issue of that person being Indian or that person being an anthropologist isn't always crucial to this topic on hand. Yeah, Joey Hess and I talk to you a lot, and you don't know it's me because I refuse to put my name out on the internet on a Broadway. So you keep wondering who this D-Lib person is. That's funny. Trust, if I get cut off, this will have to be, maybe it's okay to be the last topic, but this is crucial. In this free software communities, trust and representation is so crucial to so many of the projects that get done and is so central to so many of the breakdowns and the community fractures and the forking that happens, because your ability to put your work forward is so reliant on people trusting who you are and your reputation basis that when you get an ad hominem attack about who you are because someone doesn't like your code or doesn't like your technical suggestion, it means that you might go into fight or flight mode, right? You need to run out the door and block those people or make sure that they don't get any airtime or turn off or fight back because of fear, right? Because your reputation is crucial. So I think for anyone in this community who is listening to this that's interested in how to help facilitate as a participant or actually learn how to be a good moderator, remember that we need to separate that those questions of representation of what's going on from your experience inside who you are that I need to know in order to understand where you're coming from. But remember that that might be separate, even if I don't like you, from the accuracy and strength and value of the code you're producing that might be more of an objective thing that we can work on together in certain contexts. So somehow we need to help developers separate out their reputation from the value of your code, from that a bug report doesn't mean they're a bad person, that a decision that a project not use your code for that application doesn't need to hurt your reputation as a good community member that has a lot to provide. I'm sorry, I'm getting distracted by the IRC. I'm going to try not to look at it. And for that reason, I'd like to talk about historical alliance building. And this term comes out of community development. I think Marx used this term. And the idea is that your alliances need not be permanent, forever alliances sanctified by God. These are alliances that don't necessarily come out of your deep instincts about what's right in the world. And it's not about giving up your principles. It's about having your principles be strong enough that you can work with people you don't like to get those principles met. So if democracy and the Constitution of the United States is crucial, then we need to work with other people who also believe that, who have very different political ideas than us in terms of local laws, right? Because we need to keep that safe space to fight. We need to be able to safely argue with civil discourse in ways that allow us to govern ourselves. Otherwise, somebody else is going to govern us for us. That was my lecture there. I had a good example of it. And that is that a young man in a consensus-based community, and I studied for my dissertation, I looked at three communities that had high amount of capital to deliberate on. They were all controlling, owning together large communities, large-ish, but they had a lot of money at stake, and they had from 12 to 40 households, if I remember correctly, in each one. And they had full consensus decision-making, and they'd been going on for over 20 years. And in asking some of the young people who grew up in those communities how they would make a good proposal, if they needed the community to change, having grown up there, if they needed to make the community change, how would they go about getting a good proposal accepted by their community? And you know what they said to me was, I would first go low key and talk to all the folks that I thought wouldn't like my idea and try to figure out what their concerns would be and what I would have to address in order to get a good proposal together. Wow. That is not a majority rule, finding your allies and fighting against all your opponents. You know, that means talking to the people that first that you're going to disagree with. Another recommendation that I like from Debian, I believe, has these recommendations: assume goodwill. And I think I'm running out of time. A forum example. There was a fight between people in forum. This happens regularly, but 10 years later or 6 years later, I'm looking for an answer to a question about a technical, you know, some like obscure technical configuration I want to change. And the argument they were having about that issue on that forum means that this person, this guy here gives a snarky response to this person here who had the same question that I have about this. And so this person's question about this answer, this project, doesn't get an answer. It's the only person I can find on the internet who asked that question, and he couldn't get a clear answer. So just remember, we're talking, we're writing the future here, you know? And if this person's concerns don't seem legitimate to you and just fluffy stuff, remember that this discourse that you're having is going to last. It's all being written and it's going to be remembered. And your ability to civilly discuss this person's question about this object is what's going to go down in history. I think I'm going to stop it there. There's always more to say, but do I have any time for questions, or did I use it all up?
Katrin, you have still time, like more than 5 minutes, so.
Until we get to question and answer?
No, until we just close the session.
Oh, yeah, I would like to hear from people. If you can help summarize what their questions are, that would be great. Sure,
actually, there are two of them. Well,
or comments is fine, too.
Okay, first of all, thank you for your presentation. It was really well nice to listen and watch. And first question came is actually about the communication channels that you talked about, that since communication channels acts as a binder around people, somebody asked, what if the expectation around such communication channels change, like private versus public mailing lists or IRC channels with or without code of conducts? That was the question.
Yeah. So when I think about that 90% of communications is finding the channel, that's part of recommending people that they set aside the required time and energy and resources for making those changes. Because it's not just about getting the content, right? I use the example that I was raised with was descriptions of the Vietnam War interactions on radio. Just because they were under attack and in the field and with bombs on them doesn't mean they didn't have to go through the ritual of saying, I hear you, we were connected, Roger, you know, whatever their rituals are, those things need to be there in order to make that information available and useful at the, on the moment.
Right. Well, as a radio operator, I understand that really, really well. Okay. A fair amount of discussion went through about, consensus, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And there is probably a divide between just seeking consensus with, as a hostile takeover. So people were talking about that, if it's like a phrasing problem, or it's just consensus is something exclusive or is inclusive. So what do you think about that?
Well, let me just back up to what is consensus, right?
Yeah, sure.
Consensus, when you get down to it, means connecting senses. So it means thinking things out together. So we have a consensus that we are all going to meet here for these 2 days online. If someone tells me, no, you're going to meet another day, I have the ability to step aside from that decision because I just won't show up. I vote with my feet. So if you want us to think it out together, I guess what we came up with was somebody had the power to change the date to a day I couldn't be there. That's the consensus. But if you're asking what do we all, when we do have the opportunity to bring our minds together, how do we think it out? When you start talking about it in terms of voting and thinking about blocking, in terms of a 100% vote, it doesn't work. It's different, right?
Yeah, that is true. Well, there's always a hard side of having a consensus, but probably the matter is actually surrounding about how actually people are using their power to just decide on topics, probably than the surroundings, what's surrounding the people. Mm-hmm. Well, there's another question. Well, probably this, the consensus problem is handled. And probably this is more practical. The question is just like that. Do you know of any examples of good rule listings for keeping communication civil and productive? Besides your excellent talk.
Right. A really short, fast, practical idea is to empower the people in your community interested in that into doing peer education and improving it within your community. Different communities will do it differently. There will be some rules that won't make any sense in one across the other. And I want to talk to an international audience here. So I really encourage people to, as a community, to give time, give energy, give focus, give resources to people who are working on this problem. It is really hard work. It's very, very valuable, and it's worth the time.
All right, good. Well, can I ask a question? Do I get to have a question? Okay. Well, this question is always in my mind. When there is a group of people that some way lacks the critical thinking, either by lack of education or maybe purposefully doing that, is there a way to find a common ground to just settle as a disagreements? Because when people don't communicate with a single how can I just say that in a common, it things tend to just get out of the rail. What do you think about that? Is that critical thinking is just like a permanent?
Mm-hmm. It's huge. One of the things I thought of when deciding what to put in this talk was this centralized versus peer-to-peer communication. There are a lot of newbies out there. They just don't know how to do it. There have always been people who just don't have the skills. But right now in history, we have a whole bunch of people doing shotgun communications with a lot of collateral damage, right? They're just learning how to broadcast their favorite idea of the moment to an international audience instantaneously. It's causing a lot of harm.
That's true. I get it. Well, we are time is up for us, and I thank you very much for this really interactive and really educating speech. And if you have any last words, probably that's the time. And again, thank you for your speech as a whole community.
My last words are thank you all. I love over the last 6 years giving occasional talks and hearing people take those ideas and make them more successful than I had even imagined. So thank you all. It's an amazing community. Rock on, right?
Thank you very much. Okay, see you next year probably if you have the chance.
Bye-bye.
Take care of yourself.